Welcome back, everybody. Todd Zwillick with you. It's the first Monday in October, and that means the Supreme Court is back in session. There is a docket full of big cases ready for the fall of 2017. Well, just last week, justices canceled oral arguments in the travel ban case after President Trump issued a new set of restrictions. That doesn't mean they won't hear the case eventually. It just means that lawyers on both sides have to file new briefs addressing the changes from the White House. Also on Thursday, the court agreed to hear a case challenging the constitutionality of fees paid to public sector unions, and that could be bad news for organized labor. But let's get a rundown now of some of the most important cases coming up for the court in this new session. Amy Howe is here to help us out. Amy is one of the co-founders of SCOTUS Blog, and she begins with Gill versus Whitford. It's a case from Wisconsin scheduled for oral argument tomorrow that could affect how parties exercise political power across the country.
The allegation is that the Republicans engaged in what's known as partisan gerrymandering, drawing the districts to favor Republicans. And this is something that the Supreme Court has looked at over the years. But back in 2004, in a case out of Pennsylvania, the justices declined to get involved in the case. There were nine justices at the time, a slightly different makeup from what we have on the Supreme Court today. And four of them said that courts should never get involved reviewing allegations of partisan gerrymandering. Four more liberal justices at the time said, of course, courts should get involved in partisan gerrymandering. And the ninth justice was Justice Anthony Kennedy, who said that we don't want to rule out the idea that courts can rule on partisan gerrymandering cases, but I don't think we should get involved because so far we haven't come up with a workable standard to figure out exactly how you judge claims of partisan gerrymandering. And so that is really at the core of what the Supreme Court will be looking at, is not simply whether this was a case of partisan gerrymandering, but is this the sort of thing that courts can get involved in at all?
Could this case impact how districts are drawn throughout the country, all these strangely shaped congressional districts you see in states around the country?
Depending on what the Supreme Court says, it certainly could. If the Supreme Court were to say, we're not going to get involved in partisan gerrymandering right now, then it would really give states something close to carte blanche to draw districts however they wanted. And the thing about partisan gerrymandering is that if you have one party in control of the legislature and they get to draw the districts, they can draw the districts in a way that will make it incredibly difficult for the other party to take over and have its own shot at drawing the districts. On the other hand, if the Supreme Court were to rule that courts can get involved in partisan gerrymandering cases just the way that they can in racial gerrymandering cases, they're going to have to come up with a way to judge whether or not a district has been partisan gerrymandered, and it could embroil the courts in really, you know, looking at each and every redistricting plan over and over again, which is something I think that the court will be reluctant to do. But either way, there's going to be an impact on how states draw their districts in the future.
Amy, there's a long-awaited case coming out of Colorado and the rights of a cake shop owner to refuse to make a cake for a gay wedding.
That's right. The rationale in Masterpiece Cake Shop, the case out of Colorado, is that the baker in this case who refused to make a custom wedding cake for a same-sex couple, that this violated his religious beliefs. He's a deeply religious person who, he tells the Supreme Court, practices his Christian faith by being closed on Sundays, refusing to make cakes themed for Halloween or cakes that contain alcohol. But the atmospherics are certainly very interesting, particularly because the federal government did file a brief in this case in which it defended the cake shop owner and offered a fairly narrow ground for the cake shop owner to win. It said that certainly not everyone who has anything to do with weddings, for example, can refuse to provide services to a same-sex couple just because they don't believe in same-sex marriage. But here, this cake shop owner calls himself a cake artist. He is expressing himself. The state government shouldn't require him to express himself in a way that violates his religious beliefs.
We've seen the increasing use of religious freedom claims across the culture and cases that have reached the Supreme Court. Hobby Lobby, as it related to Obamacare, was one issue. There were certainly religious freedom claims brought up when it came to same-sex marriage and the Obergefell case. And this seems like another example of that strategy.
It is, and it's a very interesting intersection, sort of two lines of cases. You've got, on one hand, same-sex marriage in the Obergefell decision a couple of years ago, and then on the other hand, religious freedom. And so Justice Anthony Kennedy, of course, is sort of the author of many of the Supreme Court's most important decisions involving gay rights and same-sex marriage. But on the other hand, he was in the five-justice majority in the Hobby Lobby case a few years ago. And that was a case in which the Supreme Court ruled that a corporation owned by a deeply religious family couldn't be required to provide its female employees with health insurance that includes access to birth control. So two very important issues are colliding in this case, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
There's a Fourth Amendment case finally, Amy, coming before the court, Carpenter v. the United States, sort of the ongoing concern over search and seizure and cell phone records.
Carpenter is a slightly more straightforward case. It involves what are known as cell site records. When your cell phone is on and you're traveling around the country, it's constantly connecting with cell towers. And this is something that your cell phone company keeps records of, in part so that it can figure out where the gaps are in its coverage. It can figure out whether or not it needs to charge you those really large roaming fees. But this was a case in which Carpenter was under investigation for participating in a series of armed robberies, and the police were able to use his cell phone records to put him in the vicinity of the robberies. He was ultimately convicted. And so the question under the Supreme Court's old rules was something called the third-party doctrine, that you don't have an interest in information that you've shared with other people, in this case, your cell phone company, which is the one that's actually collecting the records. And so the question is whether or not that is going to make the police's use of Carpenter's cell phone records constitutional, or are we going to have to sort of rethink how some of these older Supreme Court cases apply to new technology?
A packed docket at the Supreme Court for the fall session of 2017. Amy Howe, co-founder of the great SCOTUS blog, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.